Hello, welcome to your favorite bookish podcast, Fully Booked and Caffeinated. I'm Kelsey.
And I'm Heather.
And today we will be discussing and reviewing Heated Rivalry by Rachel Reed. As usual, let's talk about our fuel for this discussion. What are you drinking, Heather?
I have some water next to me now because, you know, it's 7:30 at night. I can't drink a coffee. But this morning I went to Starbucks and do you sometimes get those messages on the Starbucks app? They're like, oh, try this off like the secret menu or whatever. Mm-hmm. And one of them today was like, you should add white chocolate mocha to your brown sugar shaken espresso. So I did.
Oh.
Mm-hmm.
Was that delicious?
Yeah, I wish I did the brown sugar cold foam, though, instead of the vanilla sweet cold foam, because that's what it said to do. I think it would have been better with the brown sugar. But no, it wasn't. It was pretty good.
That does sound good.
Mm-hmm.
I do love that brown sugar shaken espresso. Well, this weekend I had to go to Dunkin', even though... Oh, I went to Dunkin', and I was like, I can't bet on their coffee, you know? Mm-hmm. So I got a latte, and... the latte was good. It had, even like the espresso didn't taste strong enough to me. Mm. I don't know. I think I'm just like used to drinking Starbucks or Nespresso, which is obviously much stronger. But I had to go there so I could get a brownie batter donut before they're all gone, which, you know, it's the 16th today, so they're probably all gone.
Yeah.
So I was able to get one more before the cutoff. And that was the highlight, not my coffee.
I love that for you. We love the best brownie batter donut.
The best part of February. All right. Well, cheers.
Cheers.
Okay. So, Rachel Reed, whose real name is Rochelle Goguen. Mm. I don't know. I didn't do a pronunciation because we're talking about Rachel Reed. Okay. So, she lives in Nova Scotia. And according to her bio, she has 2 boring degrees and 2 interesting kids. In August 2023, Rachel was diagnosed with Parkinson's disease, which is a chronic neurological disorder that has no cure.
Mm-hmm.
And so obviously it was, you know, earth-shattering news. And then literally 4 days after she got this diagnosis, she checked her Instagram DMs and she had a message from Jacob Tierney inquiring about her 2019 novel, Heated Rivalry. So they scheduled a Zoom call for the very next day, and Tierney explained his vision for the TV series. And according to Rachel, it was exactly the show that everybody's seeing. Like, from his initial pitch, very little change to the execution, which, you know, is pretty unusual for adaptations.
Yeah.
But basically, she was so moved by it because it was exactly the right timing. Like, she was so depressed by this, you know, diagnosis that she had gotten, and this came at exactly the right time to like make her not focus on that, you know.
Yeah, that's nice.
Yeah, so everything happened really quickly, and she also says that she really wasn't involved in the writing of the scripts or anything like that. She wasn't even like considered a consultant, but Tierney did send everything to her for her to read and not approve, but he wanted to get like her view on it, which is shocking since the show is basically word for word from the book at most points.
It pretty much is.
So technically she did write the script.
Yeah.
And in plenty of interviews, Rachel Reed has expressed her excitement about the adaptation, noting that it has brought her story to a wider audience and provided representation that is often lacking in sports narratives.
Yeah. It's a big phenomenon right now.
Yeah, I mean, even me, I wouldn't say that I would ever pick up a sports romance unless either you told me to or the internet told me to. And, you know, that's the only thing that made me read this. So this book was originally published in 2019. It's the second in the Game Changer series. It has 278,000 ratings and 4.3 stars on Goodreads, which is very good.
That is good.
All right. Are you ready for the story graph? Who's it for?
Oh, yes, I am.
This is for readers who crave a fast-paced, lighthearted romance that explores the tension between fierce competition and hidden desire. Ideal if you enjoy witty, emotionally charged, character-driven stories with a sporty backdrop, snappy dialogue, and a playful yet heartfelt LGBTQIA+ rivalry to love vibe.
Wow.
Big on the word salad. Too many letters in the LGBTQIA+, because really there's only like 3 letters in mm-hmm. this book.
Yeah.
But I love that for, you know, for StoryGraph. All right. So here is the actual book description. Pro hockey star Shane Hollander isn't just crazy talented. He's got a spotless reputation. Hockey is his life. Now that he's captain of the Montreal Voyagers, he won't let anything jeopardize that, especially the sexy Russian whose hard body keeps him awake at night.
Okay.
Boston Bears captain Ilya Rozanov is everything Shane's not. The self-proclaimed king of the ice, he's as cocky as he is talented. No one can beat him except Shane. They've made a career on their legendary rivalry, but when the skates come off, the heat between them is undeniable. When Ilya realizes he wants more than a few secret hookups, he knows he must walk away. The risk is too great. As their attraction intensifies, they struggle to keep their relationship out of the public eye. If the truth comes out, it could ruin them both. But when their need for each other rivals their ambition on the ice, secrecy is no longer an option. I just had a vision of them, like, in their ice skates, and then like ripping their ice skates off so that they could passionately make love
on the ice.
But there's never any skate situations. Those are completely separate from the sex yeah, scenes.
They are.
Okay. So for the plot, there isn't much. So we're just going to discuss some of the highlights that define the changes in the trajectory of their relationship.
Okay.
And then we will discuss. So we start out immediately with a steamy quickie between Shane and Ilya. And immediately after the interaction, based on, you know, their internal dialogue, we know that this is something that they have a lot of guilt around and something mm-hmm. that is forbidden, but has been going on for a long time. And then the story flashes back to when it all started, the beginning of their sexcapades.
Is that what we're calling it?
Sure, we sure are. They meet in December 2008, and their first moment of sexual tension is in June 2009, so it's a good amount after this, and it's when both Shane and Ilya are drafted to the NHL, mm-hmm. and they have a competitive moment in the hotel gym where they're racing on the treadmills, could never be me, and... Mm-hmm. There's definitely chemistry, but Shane is like, oh my God, no. First off, I'm not gay. Mm-hmm. And second, there's no way that Ilya is gay and or flirting with me.
Mm-hmm.
But like, he felt a little something.
Mm-hmm.
He's like, wow, these Russians sure are flirty. I don't think they are.
Yeah, I don't think they are either.
So July 2010, just over a year later, is when the first hookup actually takes place. And... it starts when they're in the shower together, not together, but at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
And Shane gets a boner. And this is peak cringe, because I can only imagine what would happen if Ilya wasn't queer and how Shane would have been mercilessly bullied and other players would have felt mm-hmm. uncomfortable around him if word had spread.
Yeah.
And some men are so... homophobic that they would never mm-hmm. want to be naked in front of someone who is gay. And so then the fact that he's also seemingly turned on would not be a good sign. But it ends up working out.
It does. Because then Ilya's like, I'm going to stroke myself in the shower while we're here.
I was shocked. I was like, oh, he's just...
And Shane's oh, like, not here.
Not here. He's like, oh, shut up. It's nothing. And then Ilya's like, you sure? It was something. So they end up meeting in Shane's hotel room and having a quick but passionate hookup. And mm-hmm. this starts the pattern that will continue over the next 6 years or so of hidden quick hookups that they both kind of regret afterwards. At one point, Shane buys a building for them to hook up in, which is so Shane-coded, it's hilarious.
I know.
And other than that, they're just meeting in random hotel rooms whenever they're playing each other or playing in the same city. And it's not on any type of constant schedule. Like, they might not see each other for 6 months, or they might see each other twice in 1 month, or it's just based on the schedules and the schedule of other hockey-related events. They have their numbers in each other's phones under Lily and Jane to camouflage the fact that they're texting while arranging the logistics. But they're not actually texting. They're only texting about details for their meetings.
Yes, exactly.
And at first, I did not catch on to Lily and Jane. Like, obviously, this is so close to their names.
Oh.
It just, yeah. It baffled me.
Yeah, so, I didn't catch that either until you just said that.
Yeah, I'm like, Jane and Shane, and then Lily and Ilya. Yes, it makes perfect sense.
Yeah, it makes sense.
So the next monumental hookup is in 2014, when they're in Las Vegas, and Ilya wins the MVP award. And this is also shortly after he's won the Stanley Cup. And invites Shane over for a hookup in the hotel. And this is different than any other time in the past. Ilya is really pushing the control narrative. And he directs Shane to get on the bed and kind of perform for him. And they end up having pretty rough and meaningless sex. And as Shane is leaving after, he realizes that they didn't even kiss. Which is not normal, because usually they are attacking each other with their tongues.
Yeah, exactly.
And he realizes that he's not happy about that. So this is definitely Ilya trying to put some distance between himself and Shane and just make it solely about the sex. Which, you know, we all know is not going to work. So 2 years later, literally 2 years later, this baffles me, the timeline of this goddamn book. So there's a hookup in Ilya's penthouse, and afterwards, Ilya asks Shane to stay over, which is a completely new thing for them. They've never stayed together after hooking up. Like, usually they get out of there pretty quick. And Shane is freaking out and overanalyzing, but Ilya acts cool as a cucumber. So Shane is like, okay, I'm totally just overthinking this. He just wants to, like, keep fucking, which, like, is also true. But Ilya's like, so you want a tuna melt? And he makes them tuna melts, which I literally text you while I was reading this. And I was like, the fact that then directly after the tuna melts, the plates are still there. This whole place smells like tuna. Okay. Your breath smells like tuna. Everyone smells like tuna. And they hook up with their tuna breath. And then when Ilya comes, he says, Shane, not Hollander, but Shane. And Shane whispers back, Ilya. And this is not good.
Yes.
So Shane rushes the fuck out of there. And, like, so obviously making up an excuse. He's like, oh, I forgot I have a team meeting. And Ilya's like, you forgot you have a team meeting? Like, obviously Shane is a Virgo. He would never forget such a thing.
No, absolutely not.
But it's just such a monumental thing, because this is the first time that he's even referred to Shane by his first name, let alone during sex.
Yeah, this is, like, the first real intimate moment between them.
And even, like, I'm not going to get into the graphicness of these sex scenes, but even this scene of them together is so much more intimate. Like, they're sitting on the couch, not cuddling, but, like, sitting near each other, talking about hockey, just, like, kind of bullshitting, which they never normally do.
Yeah, it's like a domestic relationship, like what 100%. You do normally.
And then when they actually, like, get into the act, they're very close. There's no, like, roughness. It's very, it is all very intimate. And then this is, like, the climax, literally. And Shane is, like, panicking, because he's like,
yeah,
this is getting too real. I know that I have feelings. I don't know what the hell Illy is feeling because he doesn't show any of his emotions. Mm-hmm. Yeah, but like this was obviously a change. Like too much happened in this one interaction. So shortly after this, Shane meets Rose at a party, and Rose is a big name actress. So paparazzi photos start coming out of the two of them, which of course Ilya isn't happy about, but he refuses to admit why he's not happy about it. Mm-hmm. And he basically says it's probably because he doesn't want some famous actress playing with his favorite toy. Okay, Ilya. Okay. But anyway, Rose seems to really like Shane, even though they don't have much in common.
Mm-hmm.
But after a while, she decides that they have to talk because something isn't clicking with their relationship. And we know that their sex life is not great.
Yeah.
So they go out to eat, and Rose basically says to Shane, "Are you gay?" And he's like, "What? No. Oh my God, what? No, of course not.
Absolutely not."
But they have a really good conversation where she's just so gentle with him and talks him through it and gets him to acknowledge that, yeah, sex is different with guys. And yeah, he probably isn't interested in women and et cetera, et cetera. And they break up, but it's on really, really great terms. Mm-hmm. And they agree to stay friends. And Rose specifically acknowledges that she is sure that Shane doesn't have anyone to talk to about certain mm-hmm. things and that she'll be there for him no matter what. What did you think of, because I didn't see this coming, like what did you think of the relationship between Rose and Shane and how this kind of played out?
I really liked Rose as a character, and it's just such a big deal for Shane because he doesn't really have anyone that he can truly lean on or talk about this dilemma that he has as he's trying to navigate what it means to be either bisexual or gay and, like, fully determining, you know, that he is, like, gay. And I think being able to talk it through with someone who he's close with and values their opinion, it's, like, a really important part of the book, you know, because I feel like a lot of the times, especially in sports, when men are gay, I'm sure that they have to, like, hide it.
Mm-hmm.
Because people...
Yeah, and Rose really is the best person to have this conversation with him because she is so real and she is good at communicating and she is so, like, tender with him and talks him through it. Doesn't, like, at first he tries to, like, he kind of, like, clams up and she's like, no. It's totally fine. Let's, like, talk about it. And the fact that, you know, she says to him, like, I know that this is really hard for you and that you don't have someone to talk to about this and that there aren't openly gay people in the NHL. Like, she acknowledges all of that. And I think this was the best person for him to finally say this out loud to.
Yeah.
Because this is literally the first person.
It's like his first real safe space.
And we come to find out that his real best friend is not a safe space, but anyway. So, okay, I want to pause for a second and discuss Shane and Ilya's home lives because these are a very big part of the story. Ilya more so than Shane, but it does factor in and shape like their behaviors in every aspect of this book. So there's a quote when Ilya's watching the, like, profile they did on Shane, like, where they go to his cottage and they interview him and he's, like, doing yoga outside and he's just, like, such a picture-perfect image of, you know, what this celebrity is supposed to be. So the quote is, Shane Hollander was the wholesome, heroic sweetheart and Ilya was the obnoxious rock star. They were polar opposites, according to any NHL analyst, and therefore destined to clash forever, neatly dividing hockey fans in the process. And it's so true. Like, people, they have this rivalry, which is obvious because they are both talented hockey players and they're both the best of the best, but it's also because of their opposite personalities.
Yeah.
Like, that factors into how this rivalry has become something so big. So Shane has these amazing parents who are super supportive. They've been there for him no matter what, they're always looking out for his best interest. They show up to almost all of his games. Mm-hmm. He has a super close relationship with them. And he also has his best friend, Hayden, who is a fellow hockey player. And he spends a lot of time with Hayden and his family. And everyone, of course, is always asking Shane why he doesn't have a girlfriend.
Mm.
None of them ask him if he's gay because they are not Rose. And Ilya is quite the opposite. His mother died when he was younger. His dad is a very strict, traditional Russian police officer who mm-hmm. basically tells Ilya anytime he loses a hockey game that he's bringing shame to not only his family, but to the entire country of Russia, which is a very, very big responsibility.
Yeah. It's a lot it's to a goddamn put on hockey a game. Young kid's shoulders.
I mean, like, we wonder why men in sports have all these complexes. Mm-hmm. We'll get to it. So, and his brother Alexei is also a cop who has a gambling problem and mm-hmm. basically guilts Ilya into giving him tons of his NHL money because he's the one who's in Russia, quote unquote, taking care of their father, who is now suffering from dementia. And it's really hard for Ilya because he hates his family.
Yeah.
But he still worries about his dad because he is deteriorating and he mm-hmm. still does feel an obligation to support them because he is making all this money and he doesn't need all this money.
Mm-hmm.
So why wouldn't he be giving it to them
yeah.
to help them? And it's just it's a fucked up situation because they expect it. They're not grateful at all for what mm-hmm. he gives them. And that would change the whole narrative if they were actually grateful.
Yeah, exactly. But I also think that it shows, like, the dichotomy of, like, who Ilya is. Because, as you said, the book portrays him as, like, this obnoxious rock star. But he truly does have a kind heart.
Mm-hmm.
And this is proof of that. Because he's willing to take care of the family who treats him terribly.
100%. And it's so obviously a defense mechanism that he has perfected over the years because yeah. he, about so many things in life, he is kind of laid back or doesn't get worked up about things. Mm-hmm. And that's because that's the way he's always had to be. Because if he internalized all of these horrible things that his dad and brother said to him, he'd yeah. never survive.
Mm-mm.
So, yeah, I think to your point, like that's, it really shows us that as hard as he is trying to not let it affect him, of course it does.
Mm-hmm.
And aside from his family, he has this friend, Svetlana, who is Russian. She has a connection to hockey and she lives in the US. So she's like very easily accessible. And mm-hmm. they do have a friends with benefits situation. And she's one of the only people he really connects with.
Mm-hmm.
Like they don't really talk. But sometimes she'll, like, force him to talk or read his mind, basically, and know mm-hmm. what the fuck's going on in there, you know? And he does have a pretty active sex life before and in the early years with Shane because he is into both men and women and he's kind of a playboy.
Yes, absolutely.
So, back to the non-plot. The next big event we have is when Ilya unexpectedly flies back to Russia because his dad died. And it's the first time that we're getting something non-sex or hockey related where Shane and Ilya are able to talk. And mm-hmm. Shane is like, let me try something a little different and reach out and be like, dude, I know you're going through something. If you ever need to talk, like, I'm here for you.
Mm-hmm.
And surprisingly, Ilya does. He calls Shane to vent a little bit. And Shane has the idea for him to word vomit everything he's feeling in Russian, even though Shane won't understand it, he thinks it may help.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm so happy that in the book, Ilya acknowledges that Shane could have been using a translation app.
I thought of you when I read that, because obviously, like, we watched the show while reading the book, and, like, that happened mm-hmm. before I got to it in the book. And as soon as, like, I read that, I was like, oh, this was Kelsey's whole point.
Yeah, I'm like, I literally would have had my translation mm-hmm. app going, but Shane is too pure-hearted for that.
Mm-hmm.
So it really does help. But the kicker is that he finishes with, and on top of everything, I'm pretty sure I'm in love with you and I don't know what to do about it.
Yeah.
And this is a huge moment because afterwards, Ilya says like how much better he feels, even though Shane had no idea what he was saying. But mm-hmm. it's like this weight lifted off his shoulders. And he's finally allowing himself to admit that he does have feelings for Shane that he's been trying to fight for years at mm-hmm. this point, like years and years. And so it's still in his mind. He's like, there's nothing I can do about it. There's nothing that I can move forward with this, but at least I said my truth out loud.
Yeah, exactly.
And this is like one of my favorite parts of the show and therefore one of my favorite parts of the book, because the way that like Ilya doesn't ask anyone for help. He doesn't rely on anyone. He's never been able to. Mm-hmm. And so just this little thing of being able to talk about his feelings or just unload, and for Shane to be, because he's like, oh, English is hard today, because mm-hmm. Ilya has to like concentrate to be able to translate everything into English. And Shane is like, okay, well, don't worry about English. Just, you know, talk in like your native tongue. It's fine. And it's such a big moment for us, the audience, to get to know Ilya and be like, okay, he is finally... The fact that his dad died is like this tether mm-hmm. is finally being released. Mm-hmm. He doesn't have that obligation anymore. He doesn't have that guilt about not being in Russia and not spending time there with his father. And all of a sudden, he's kind of able to just, like, unload all of that. Mm-hmm. So a little while after this, Shane and Ilya are playing against each other in a hockey game, obviously. Obviously, they're hockey people. And playfully messing with each other, which leads Shane to get distracted and to get taken out by a guy mm-hmm. on Ilya's team. And Ilya panics. Not only does he react very obviously in public, but the evidence of this being more than just a fling is building up for both yeah. guys in a way that they can't keep ignoring, because these things are happening in their lives and they're getting genuinely worried for the mm-hmm. other one. Like between, you know, his dad dying and then Shane getting this possibly career-ending injury. Mm-hmm. Which it isn't. He just ends up with a broken collarbone, possibly some CTE, but we won't know until, you know, until they can examine his brain. But Ilya then goes to visit him in the hospital and he kind of, you know, uses the excuse that, oh, it's not that crazy for the captain of the opposing yeah. team to go see him.
Go check on him.
Yeah. And Shane is all drugged up. So he's like trying to hold his hand and he's like, you should come visit me in my cottage. And like, mm-hmm. I'm so happy you're here. And it's very cute.
It is.
And then pretty soon after this, both Shane and Ilya are out of the Stanley Cup running. So they're watching from home. And Scott Hunter, who is another NHL player, not a big deal in the book, big deal in the TV show, but he wins the Stanley Cup. And he's on the TV and he starts making out with a random fan who is actually his boyfriend.
Yeah.
And it's the first openly gay hockey player coming out in a very public and very public intimate way. Mm-hmm. Like, he didn't just hold this man's hand and say, this is my boyfriend. They're tonguing each other down. Mm-hmm. And this is such a huge pivotal moment for Ilya and Shane. Even though it doesn't necessarily change their situation at all, it gives them both courage to feel like things could change mm-hmm. or maybe one day they'll be brave enough to do that, even if it's not with each other. Just the fact of like there is a possibility that things will change, especially mm-hmm. because after this Scott Hunter gets such an amazing reception and people are so supportive of him, and so it kind of shows Shane and Ilya that it's possible.
Yeah, it does.
And immediately after it happens, Ilya calls Shane and says, I'm coming to the cottage. Which, like, is crazy because these two have barely had a real conversation. And he's like, I'm going to come to the cottage for 2 weeks.
Yeah.
Insane.
Mm-hmm.
So while they're at the cottage, their relationship quickly changes from rough, quick sex to much more intimate activities. Sitting mm-hmm. around the fire, swimming in the lake, they go jet skiing, they're cooking dinner together. And we finally get the culmination of the relationship when, in the throes of passion, Ilya says, "I love you," to Shane. And Shane responds with, "Holy shit," before then reciprocating with, "I love you." And then in the rest of the novel, they say, "I love you," approximately one gazillion times.
Yeah.
But that's fine. It's a romance novel. I get it. So now that they've admitted their love for each other, they actually need to plan for how they can be together. Yeah. They've been hiding their feelings for so long, and I totally understand this feeling. Like, even though they've gone so long avoiding their feelings, now that they're finally acknowledging them, they can't imagine pretending for another second.
Mm-hmm.
So their plan is for Ilya to start playing for a Canadian team when his contract with Boston is up, and then they'll soft launch their friendship and let people know that they are starting a charity together, which will be a hockey camp for kids where the proceeds go to helping mental health, especially depression and suicide, to honor Ilya's mom, Irina, who killed herself when he was only 12.
Mm-hmm.
And this is, obviously, it's one of the very, you know, intimate moments at the cottage when Ilya finally tells Shane what happened to his mom, and like, he was never allowed to talk about her before. He was never allowed to acknowledge her death, any of this stuff. So the fact that, of course, that's at top of Shane's mind to be like, well, we have to do something to honor your mom.
Yeah.
And it just shows how sweet of a person Shane is, and how much he loves people in his life. So they're getting closer on their little cottage retreat and loving their freedom when one day they're making out and Shane's dad walks in and sees them, which I obviously knew was going to happen.
Yeah.
And I'm so happy it was only kissing, because I feared that he would walk in on a blowjob or something. Because these two are constantly sucking each other's dicks.
Yeah, they are.
And I'm like, if he walks into a blowjob, I won't be able to handle it. I will physically throw this book. But it was just kissing, so it's fine. So Shane is freaking the fuck out. He guesses that his parents would be okay with him being gay because they have always been so supportive of him. They're not homophobic. But he definitely didn't want them to find out like this, instead of him being the one to tell them.
Yeah.
And the fact that it's with Ilya is a whole different issue than him just being gay. Like, they would rather him be gay with literally anyone other than him. So they head over to his parents' house and confess to the whole thing, how long it's been happening, that they're in love, that they have plans to have a future together, all of it. And the parents are shocked, understandably. And this is definitely, I think, the best part of the book, because you have so many moments in this conversation, like intimate moments where Shane and Ilya are supporting each other and backing each other up. And just the fact that, like, Ilya's there for him. It's just like, it's very well done. And Shane's mom is a huge hockey fan, more so than both the boys combined, and one of her first thoughts when she finds out how long it's been going on is asking Shane if he ever let Ilya win. And both of the guys are like, hell no. Ilya's like, why would he have to let me win? I win all the time. Like, it's so funny. And my favorite part of the interaction is when Shane starts having a panic attack because it's all too much. And he feels so relieved that his parents are taking it well, but then he knows that, like, okay, this is just the beginning of what's going to be a crazy future. And Ilya talks him down and, you know, tells him, like, you're fine, you're fine, your family's here, your parents love you, I'm your boyfriend, like, I love you. And Shane's mom says to his dad, since their rookie season, I can't believe it. And the dad responds and says, looking at them now, I kind of can. So sweet.
It was.
And then in the epilogue, we get the night of the unveiling of the charity, and we find out that Ilya has signed with Ottawa. Shane has come out to his teammates, but the only one who knows specifically about Ilya is his best friend, Hayden, who is a real jackass about it. Like, so unsupportive. I know. Whatever. I mean, they do have to stop, like, making out in front of him, but... But we see that Shane and Ilya are closer than ever. They have a system that works for them, and they're determined to keep working towards the life that they want together. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the end. There wasn't much about hockey. Are all sports romances like this?
No.
Like, there was... They could have been playing any sport, and I wouldn't have noticed the difference.
Yeah, I feel like the other ones I've read, there's at least a little bit more going on sports-wise.
I feel like there should at least be, like, a happy medium.
Mm-hmm.
Because I don't want it to be an overload of sports. Like, remember we read that one book about snowboarding, and they just went on and on about snowboarding and the tricks and the... And I was like, okay. But anyway, so...
Oh, yeah, which book was that? That was...
It was... Allie...
Was it Shiver?
Shiver. Mm-hmm. Allie Reynolds?
Reynolds, yeah.
Yeah. And, okay, I do realize what I was getting into because I picked a queer romance. I knew mm-hmm. there would be gay sex. I mm-hmm. love gay sex. I'm a gay. But lots of penis descriptions.
Yeah.
And I don't find penises particularly attractive. So I was, it was a little much for me. The amount of times... That they said the slit.
Oh, yeah, I know.
I almost convulsed.
Yeah, I'm not a big... I don't love when there's too much descriptor of the genitals.
Mm-hmm.
Because it just
mm-hmm.
kind of pulls me out of it.
Mm-hmm.
But that isn't, like, in any romance novel. Not just this one. Because trust me, there's a lot where they go into, like, way too much about the female anatomy. And mm-hmm. I'm like, I know what I'm working with. I don't need to, like, be told what's going mm-hmm. on in full detail.
I completely agree. I love the lead up and the actual act.
Same.
Not the intense descriptions of where the fingers are going and the tongue mm-hmm. is going and the... Like, I get it. I get yeah. it. I don't need... I'm not into butthole stuff, so I don't need to know that Ilya was... tongue in his butthole, okay?
That was, like, the only thing they didn't put in the TV show.
And then they kissed after. Bruh, yeah. You're gonna get a disease. You can't be putting poop in your mouth.
And it's, like, I love spicy books. I never shy away from them. But this one actually had too much sex in it for me. Like, it mm-hmm. was not... It really was... 70% of the book porn without plot
mm-hmm.
for a lot of it. And, you know, once we finally got to the shift in Ilya, then I think the book got progressively better and had more of a point.
Mm-hmm.
But it really, this was really just like a story about two guys hooking up.
And I feel like we wouldn't have noticed it as much if there was plot. Mm-hmm. In between the hookups.
No, because it was just, it was like every chapter was like sex. And I'm like, that's mm-hmm. fine. There's nothing wrong with that. Because I know a lot of people are like into that. But I do like to have a little bit of plot mixed mm-hmm. in with my porn.
Yeah, because to your point, when it did start, and when mm-hmm. we do actually start getting to know, especially Ilya more.
Yeah.
It felt a lot different. But the whole beginning was just like, so many dicks.
I know. I feel like Shane was pretty consistent throughout the book. Like, I didn't really see much character development for him, except for, like, accepting the fact that he was gay. But, like, Ilya's character shifted and changed so much throughout the book in, like, mm-hmm. a good way.
Yeah, I completely agree. I also, I mean, I said this to you, I really disliked the dialogue for... Maybe the first half or, like, mm-hmm. first third of the book where Shane's only response is fuck you. Every time Ilya playfully, yeah. like, razzes him, his response is always fuck you, and, like, mm-hmm. I noticed it in the show also. And so I watched the first two episodes before I even started the book, and it bothered me a lot in the show. Like, that was his only comeback for anything.
Yeah, I also did not like the first two episodes, and I watched the entire series before I started the book as well, and I was worried And I also couldn't understand the hype of the show when I got through the first two. But then when we got to episode three, which is actually nothing about Shade and Ilya, it's fully about Scott and Kip because they're the first book in the series. And obviously they do play a big role, even though it's minuscule in the book. It is a pretty big role.
Mm-hmm.
Like, once that episode happened, I was like, I am so emotionally invested more in Scott and, or, you know, in Scott and Kip than I am Ilya and Shane. But that episode finally, I think, jump-started the series into, like, what makes it so good. Because those last four episodes were phenomenal. Were incredible.
Yeah.
The first two. But also, it was like that in the book, too. I kind of, like, it dragged on in the book as well. And I didn't love that either.
Yeah, I completely agree. I just felt like it was so unimaginative. Like, I get what she was going for, that Shane was kind of just, like, put off by how aggressively bullying Ilya was, but there are other ways to say fuck you, you know? Like, give us some variety.
I know, and I think it's just, but it seems on brand with who he is as a person as well, because I don't want to say he's, like, sheltered, but he kind of does come across as, like, this goody two-shoes.
I mean, and he's boring.
Well, yeah, he's very vanilla. Like, he's not, he doesn't really have any razzmatazz. He's just, like, very much, you know, yes sir, yes ma'am kind of, like, scenario. So I'm not remotely surprised that he can't come back with anything other than fuck you. And also, they're, like, you know, 19, 20 years old. You know, what do they really have in their repertoire of comebacks at that age? Which,
speaking of, in one of the interviews, Rachel Reed was talking about how seeing the show helped her to visualize Shane and Ilya as younger people, because when you're reading a romance or you're reading, you know, about all these sex scenes, you automatically think that these are, like, these older, established, like, dudes, you know? But really, they're basically kids, and they're exploring their identity together, you know? So, yeah, that really bothered me at the beginning in the show and the book, but it definitely, as they got more comfortable, the dialogue got better, and I agree. I didn't see the hype for the book or the TV show at the very beginning. But then it picked up.
No, it did. Right. It garnered, like, the attention it got. I understand it.
Yeah. And no, I don't want to harp on the TV show because that's not what we're talking about. But they grew on me as actors the same way that they grew on me in the book. You know?
I second that.
So, after the show came out, it obviously sparked a lot of conversation around the homophobia in hockey, and a real-life former hockey player was inspired to come out as gay, and he specifically credited that to the show, which is amazing.
It is.
And, you know, we obviously know that this is true, that in so many of these very masculine sports, it's not okay to be queer, and it can lead to bullying, the loss of respect from your teammates, the focus of the media on your personal life instead of your athletic performance. And these responses are all side effects of this concept that is masculinity, which also contributes to the stupid rivalry between Shane and Ilya. They can't just be two extremely talented hockey players. They have to be forced into a rivalry, trying to outperform each other. And it's expected that they have to hate each other because of their skills. Which is so fucking stupid. Like, I'm all for healthy rivalries and competition. I think that's all part of sports. But some fans are out of control, and they would make a fun rivalry into something so much bigger and darker. And it's just this, the toxicity of sports in general, especially in the U.S. I know that this is, like, much more prominent in the U.S., especially with, like, football and stuff like that. Like, the way that it's such a heightened emotions, there's so much heightened pressure on these athletes who are so young, who are not prepared for that type of fame, who aren't prepared for this type of attention or pressure or the fan bases and all this stuff. And then just think about then being gay on top of that, which not only is not accepted in sports, but isn't really accepted in the fucking world at large.
Exactly.
I just can't even imagine, and I can't imagine, especially thinking about how a lot of these athletes have grown up, where they might be in a household where they are pressured to perform, where they're, you know, criticized for not performing well, where their parents' affection might only be earned through them performing well. And so, of course, if, you know, they lose a game and they're bringing shame on the entire country of Russia, of course, they're not going to feel comfortable enough with those parents to tell them, oh, and by the way, I'm also gay.
Yeah. I think that the gay stigma in sports is something that, unfortunately, is never really going to be overcome, because it's just, there's just too much hatred for that and too much, like, negative connotations around it. And it's like, it's so stupid. Like, there's nothing wrong with having a different sexuality and playing a sport. I don't know why you put those two words together and all of a sudden it's like, you know, this huge issue.
And it's especially, I mean, it's because all of these sports are centered around masculinity, of course. And
but like, why does masculinity, like, why does it, why is there this thing that if you're gay, you're no longer masculine?
Like, exactly.
Like, that doesn't track, because, you know, when you see gay men, I mean, there's some gay men that are very fucking masculine. And then obviously there are a lot of gay men that are more femme. And like, that's fine. But why is it all of a sudden now, when you come out as gay, that your masculinity is now, like, stripped away?
Yeah, I think it all stems back to, you know, back in, like, the 80s when being gay was obviously a lot worse than it is now, but it was every gay person, every gay man was flamboyant and, you know, had a high voice and walked funny and all this stuff. Like, just this picture in your mind of what a gay man is supposed to look like. And the fact that, because it was such an othering, it was such a definitive thing, oh, you can tell that that person's gay. So then these other men, oh God, well, I don't want to be part of the minority. I don't want people to think that I'm gay. So I have to be as masculine as possible. And, you know, it all stems back to, everything always fucking goes back to Christianity. Okay. Because obviously, you know, in the Bible, allegedly, being gay is not okay. And also, men are supposed to be masculine. They're supposed to be the head of the house. They're supposed to be the provider. They're supposed to work with their hands and, you know, be the strongest one in the house. And to this day, even not in gay relationships, but in straight relationships where maybe the man doesn't know how to change a fucking tire, all of a sudden their masculinity is in question. Like, these are all just societal ideals that are so fucking stupid and have no reason at all. But it's just the way that we have been programmed to think.
Yeah, and that's why it's never going to, there's never going to be a change and like shift, because it's just so hammered into us as a society. And unfortunately, there's not, there's still such a huge divide of, in being, like, a homophobe or, you know, transphobe, all, everything, that it's never going to change, because there's still terrible people out there that have to put their stupid opinions on things when it's really none of their business and it doesn't affect them in any way, shape, or form.
Well, but it's the stupid thing of, oh, well, they can do whatever they want, just don't do it in front of me.
Okay, then fuck off. Like, I don't know.
But you can make out with your girlfriend in front of me, and that's okay, but I can't because I'm gay?
you can rape women and young children, but, you know, you can't watch two men.
But as long as you rape a little girl and not a little boy, it's fine. And the fact of, like, because that stigma of a gay man is somewhat feminine or somewhat, mm-hmm. you know, not as masculine, whatever, that's associated with weakness. Because, of mm-hmm. course, being feminine is being weak. Of course, because women are the weaker sex. So if a man is, you know, acting like a woman or being associated with women, of course he's going to be the weaker person in any mm-hmm. situation.
Yeah.
It's just fucking disgusting.
It's and just I hate depressing.
It. It's realistically, so depressing. It's just... Because who cares? I mean, I know I was just talking about how there's too many dicks, but they're doing that in their own private homes, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Why is it anyone else's business who someone is having sex with?
It's and, like, not.
Look at the rate of divorce in opposite sex couples. It's much, much higher.
Mm-hmm.
Look at just all of these statistics
mm-hmm.
of how much worse it is. Look at the DV statistics, like all of this stuff. And
well, that's what I was going to say. Even like when you look at like sexual predators, it's always straight old white men. 98% of the time. So, you know, why don't you just take a step back and look at your own species and race and, you know, take a look in the mirror and mm-hmm. just come to the conclusion that, no, you are actually the most feral, disgusting one mm-hmm. out of everything.
And the fact that we're just so programmed to think that anything, I'm saying we, not including like us, but I'm saying we as like the shitty people in society.
Yeah.
We're so programmed to think that anything that is different is wrong.
Is bad. Yeah.
The same way as like if you're online and you're scrolling past and someone says, oh, I really like this. You have to comment and be like, that shit fucking sucks. I can't believe you like that. No. Who cares? Who cares?
I know.
Just because it's different doesn't mean that it's wrong. And that's mm-hmm. just so this yeah. mindset of especially white men, hetero, cis, white men, anything that is not them is not okay. Mm-hmm. And therefore is morally repugnant, should be completely wiped out.
Mm-hmm.
We're getting off. We're off on a tangent right now. We're supposed to be talking about hockey. But the point is that it's very depressing.
But this is also just, no, the point is what everyone has been trying to avoid is that reading is political.
Oh, 100%. And if you think reading isn't political, you shouldn't be allowed to read.
Mm-hmm.
I want to go, anyone who says that, I want to slap the book out of their hand.
Yeah. Because I feel like, you know, any kind of book you read, it, no matter the topic, it lends to other discussions.
I mean, this podcast is proof of that because we'd be going on tangents, okay? Because
mm-hmm.
if you truly, if you are able to read and not see all of these glaring issues,
mm-hmm.
I don't envy people like that, but I wonder what it must be like to be like that. Like, I wonder mm-hmm. what it must be like to live in the U.S. right now and not know what is going on. Or not yeah. care about what is going on. You know what I mean? Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I have more discussion questions. Let's see where this goes. Okay. So there's also this idea in Ilya and Shane's sexual encounters that mimics how a lot of people feel sexually, not just gay men, but that they want something sexually that they wouldn't necessarily want in everyday life. So
mm-hmm.
although Ilya is a leader and kind of bossy in real life, and in sex, he definitely comes off as more like go with the flow in real life. Mm-hmm. But during sex, he's the dominant one overall.
Yeah.
Whereas Shane has always been a little insecure about his stature or his prettiness or his inability to grow facial hair. But during sex, he loves to be told what to do. He's eager to please and eager to take a submissive role, which isn't like his hockey life where he's mm-hmm. the captain and the leader and... He also is okay with being less than perfect at something.
Mm-hmm.
And so his drive to be better translates from hockey to blowjobs. He just wants to do it right. And he's going to keep trying until he does.
He's a perfectionist.
And we were actually just talking about this at the Super Bowl party because we were talking about how women reading romance books and if those dark romance characters are what they actually want. And it's complicated, right? Like, mm-hmm. I used the example of, I hate to be told what to do, mm-hmm. but sexually, that can be a different story. And I think it's really about the safety when you mm-hmm. trust the person you're being intimate with, or you have the comfort to ask for what you want, or the freedom to feel like you can take what you want. And then knowing that, okay, when I leave this bedroom, I'm still going to be the strong, independent woman that I am. Mm-hmm. And that's okay that I'm a different person sexually.
Yeah, I think that that's very true. Like, we as humans are multifaceted in so many different aspects of life. So I think when you bring in the sex proponent, it gives you the opportunity to indulge in like fantasies and put yourself in scenarios that you wouldn't typically be in, nor do you want to be in. But for those 15-20 minutes that you're in the bedroom, you can be whoever you want to be with no judgment or restrictions. Mm-hmm. And it's healthy, mm-hmm. you know, and it gives you the opportunity to just kind of get that out of your system in a sense. So,
yeah. And I think to that point, that's why reading is so much like that. Like, that's why we read mm-hmm. dark romances where there's like rape and, you know, domination and all this stuff. Mm-hmm. It's because at the end of the day, you know, that book is going to end. You know that yeah. it's okay for you to be turned on by this book and to close the book up and not want that in real life.
Yeah. I just think it's, you know, that's why, like, I kind of am so happy that romance has had this crazy upward trajectory these past few years. Because people would be so judgmental if you were like, I'm reading a romance. And it's like, mm-hmm. what do you mean? Like, why are you reading smut? Like, that's gross. But now it's like, everyone is reading smut. Everyone and your grandma is reading Heated Rivalry. Like, you know what I mean? And it's like, mm-hmm. and then they're liking it. And there's nothing wrong with that. You know, mm-hmm. that's like, for me, you know, I am fully straight, but I have no issue reading about gay relationships. Mm-hmm. Doesn't bother me, you know? And it's just like, you can be whoever you want to be and like what you like, and that's fine.
Mm-hmm. 100%. It's
fine. Yeah. You know, like, there's just so many different books out there, and you're not required to read what you are in real life. Mm-hmm. It gives you the chance to escape into many different worlds.
Yes, yes. That's exactly what I was going to say. That's that escapism that we always mm-hmm. talk about. That is what reading is about. Yes, mm-hmm. we still talk about all of these huge, you know, glaring issues that are in here. We're still talking mm-hmm. about masculinity and queerness and all this stuff. But at the end of the day, a book is still about escapism and being able to forget about what's going on in the real world mm-hmm. for just a little while.
Yeah.
Okay. So I want to talk about queer representation in the book space, because I don't want to single out Rachel Reed, because I do feel for her that people are speculating about her sexuality because she is writing about queer characters, and mm-hmm. people are kind of trying to force her out of the closet mm. and speculating about her sexual identity, her husband's sexual identity, because they want this validation that she's allowed to be writing books like this. So okay. I'm not trying to focus on her, because I don't support trying to force someone out of the closet, but I'm more so bringing this up just for us to discuss it, because we talk very critically about men writing women, right?
Yes.
And I think that criticism still exists when you're writing queer characters. And the reason I think it matters is because of the capitalism aspect. So she is ultimately profiting off of the backs of queer people.
Mm-hmm.
But is she also facing those obstacles that queer people face?
Mm.
You know what I mean?
Yes.
And it's like, even in the past, we've talked about like the whole controversy with T.J. Klune and how his book was inspired by like Indigenous people. And it's like, okay, mm-hmm. so you're making money off Indigenous people when you don't have to go through the same hardships that Indigenous people do.
Yeah.
And so I think that's where it gets kind of icky.
It gets muddy.
Yeah, because, like, I don't think that she should have to talk about her sexuality at all. I don't think that that's...
It's not required.
Mm-hmm. But it is... I can see people being upset if she said, no, I'm 100% straight and all of my characters are gay. And I think it is kind of fishy that she doesn't just come out and say it either way. It's completely her prerogative and, you know, mm-hmm. that's her decision. But yeah. I think there's a reason for that, because I do think people would be upset, because think of how many queer authors there are.
No, I agree with that.
Who aren't necessarily recognized or getting, and, you know, I'm not saying she's going to say, no, don't make a TV show, a extremely popular TV show about my book because I'm not gay. Of course not. But it's just the fact of how many queer creators aren't getting that same type of recognition, that same type of money, fame, whatever. Mm-hmm. And she is.
Yeah. It's very much like, I don't know. It's like, it's twofold. Like, it's hard to, I could understand if, like, you're in the queer community and you don't like that someone is profiting off of, you know, your actual life.
Mm-hmm.
But then I also, like, when I look at it on the other side, I feel like books, as we said, are a way to, like, escape or to create a story or a world that we wished we lived in or wished we experienced, especially in romance specifically. I feel like romance is definitely that genre of, this is going to sound so bad, but, like, make-believe. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Because, like, truly...
this is not how real life works.
No,
yes.
It's not. Like, the way that... what we're reading in romance novels is not what exists in the real world. Yes, there are a few unicorns, and there are good men out there that do treat women how... there are good men in the world who exist in this world that clearly were written by a woman.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
But we don't really get, you know, that's not real. So I almost wonder, for, like, someone like Rachel, maybe, you know, maybe, like, a part of her thought she was queer or mm-hmm. wants to, like, divulge into that queer world to test it out, to see, like, how she feels about it. You know, so it's hard because you don't want to take away someone's creativity.
Mm-hmm.
'Cause everyone should feel okay with putting their art out into the world.
Mm-hmm.
But I would understand if it's crossing boundaries and in inappropriate ways.
Yeah, I think there's so many different aspects to it too, especially because she is married to a man. So
mm-hmm.
I wonder if, you know, say that she was bisexual. Bisexuality is, like, a very complicated thing because mm-hmm. so many people don't validate bisexuality.
Yes.
Especially, like, I've had people in my life who don't validate me as being part of the queer community just because I was in a relationship with a man. Like,
mm-hmm.
and I get that. Like, I get where they're coming from, but it still shouldn't matter.
Mm-hmm.
Like, why should it matter? Why do I have to be put into a box? It's like, okay, yeah, I'm okay with gay people, but, like, oh God, you're not really gay, and now I don't know how to catalog you because you either have to be gay or straight, and I can't have something in between.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I think that, to your point of writing is different, and that's why even we don't have an issue with women writing male characters. We have an issue with men writing female characters because mm-hmm. women have a different way of writing. And, mm-hmm. you know, even a straight woman writing about a queer relationship can be talking about what they want a queer relationship to be. And it is very different. I also think there's probably a completely separate perspective on this that we will never be able to get into because, like you said, like, you're not queer. Mm-hmm. I am, but I'm not part of
mm-hmm.
the marginalized queer community who's been dealing with this since they were little. Like, I'm so not insecure about being gay. Like, I've never had an issue I'm just like, oh, this is who I am. If you don't like it, I don't give a fuck. Mm-hmm. And I know that other people don't have that same mindset or don't have that
the ability great experience.
Exactly. So I don't think that we'll ever fully get that side of it. But
yeah, I know. And then I think it, like when you say it like that too, it kind of almost, it makes me appreciate people that are willing to write these stories, because it gives those people who can't live these lives currently, you know, it just kind of gives them a chance to immerse themselves in a world where it is possible.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and think about, like, a teenage gay boy.
That's what I'm saying. Like, he's going to pick up this book. Being able
to read. Yeah, and, like, it's okay for him to read it because it's in the zeitgeist, because it's popular right now. No one's going to look at him twice. He's just going to be like, oh, I heard about this on TikTok. Ha ha.
Yeah, I mean, like, I think one of my favorite things that I've seen, too, is, like, on TikTok, I see it a bunch, like, straight white men, like, watching it with no, like, issue whatsoever. And it's like, this is what we need. Like, this is what we need. We need people to feel like this is normal. You can be straight and watch a gay TV show. It doesn't do anything to you. It's not going to turn you gay. Like, maybe it will, because maybe you're, you know, suppressing something. You know what I mean? But, like, realistically, there's nothing wrong with it.
I think it just further proves the fact that sexuality is not a choice, because we have several friends who have said, unfortunately, they are straight.
Like, yeah.
Sexuality cannot be a choice because no women would choose to be straight, okay? No woman wants to deal with a man if they don't have to.
No. It's just, it's all fluid. And
yeah, and I think, you know, like you said, that could be something that maybe Rachel Reed wishes she was gay or did explore when she was younger or et cetera. I mean, she's still never going to be a gay man.
No, so like, maybe there's someone in her life, you know, that she's writing this for. So, you know, but like, I can understand, I can see it from both sides of the coin. Like, I can understand people being upset if she's not truly queer, because then they don't want to feel misrepresented. So it's just, listen, nothing is black and white.
100% It's never, I think
there's nothing in this world that's black and white. As much as we think it is, it's not.
And I think this is such a nitpicking thing, because the point is, the bigger picture is that she is right. This is bringing so many more people into romance. So many people who would never turn on a show saying, hey, I got to watch them guys fucking.
No, literally. No,
it's because it's so popular on TikTok. And right now, especially, it is so mind-blowing that a movie, not even just about queer people, but about queer men, because you know that a lot of straight white men, it's okay if girls are gay, because girls making out is hot, you know, et cetera. So the fact that it is a male queer show that is so popular right now, when being gay is so taboo and so under threat and at risk, is incredible.
It's a beautiful thing, to be honest.
And we need more gay TV shows. And if you're unsure about watching the show after this, because we talked about how much sex there is, don't worry, you never see any dicks.
No, you actually don't. Like, the sex scenes are very tasteful.
Like, they're like raunchy but tasteful.
No, you know what that's what I'm saying. And like, you can feel the intimacy shining through. And I think that that's more important than just like tits and dicks.
Tits and dicks. All right. Anything else you want to discuss before we get to our ratings?
I don't think so.
Okay. I'm really happy with this one. Our rating scale is holes and goals.
Oh my God.
Come on. It was going to be puckered openings, but that's fucking disgusting. Oh no. So it's holes and goals. Sorry, I apologize.
No, you're not sorry. If you were sorry, you wouldn't have said it.
Listen, I had to read it. You had to read it. This is the way it is. So how many holes and goals are you giving Heated Rivalry?
I gave it a solid 4 holes and goals.
Okay.
Because it was like, you know, I do think that there was too much sex without plot. But when we get to the eventuality of who Shane and Ilya become as not only a couple, but themselves personally. Because, mm-hmm. like, while I said that Shane is very one-dimensional, he does grow throughout the book. Like, I'll give him that. But I just don't see him, like, changing as much as a person. Like, he's pretty much who he is.
Yes.
Set in his ways.
He just matures.
Yeah, whereas Ilya is kind of, like, we've said before, this playboy having sex with whoever, doesn't care, never lets himself get attached. And then when he does get attached, it is to, like, a man, which I think was surprising to him. But he fully accepts it, like, full stop. He's like, all right, I'm here. So I feel like once we get to that 75% point of the book where it's like the cottage on, mm-hmm. like that whole part there is like, if we had more of that, this could have very easily been like a 5-star read for me.
Mm-hmm.
But there was just not enough of them becoming who they become.
Yes.
There's not enough, like, it's like you almost, it's like funny because I feel like half the time you read romances and you complain because there's too much fluff. And I'm like, I needed more fluff.
Mm-hmm.
This book,
no, there has to be a balance.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, but it was good. I mean, decent writing, to be mm-hmm. honest. It wasn't.
Yeah, the writing was pretty good.
I liked the I liked how some chapters were short, some were long. I think that kind of is, I like when it's like that.
Mm-hmm.
And it was.
It makes it easier to read that way, I mm-hmm. think.
Yeah. Like it was good. It was a decent. It was a decent sports romance.
Yeah, I originally gave it 4, and then I think I'm landing at 3.5 holes and goals. I don't know what half of a hole or a goal is. But, like I said, I really didn't like the dialogue at the beginning. And mm-hmm. I think the reason that I dropped down to 3.5 is because if I wasn't watching the TV show simultaneously, I don't know if I would have connected to these characters at all.
I actually agree with that. I think that if I read the book first and then watched the TV show, I would be in the very similar boat for you. But I feel like because I watched it entirely and then read the book, mm-hmm. I was envisioning every scene as it happened because it's yes. literally what was projected onto the screen. So I actually can agree with that. I think that if I had read this with no context of who the characters would be if they were performed in real life, I don't think I would have given it a 4. I think because I had watched the show and I saw the chemistry between, you know, Hudson and Connor, they're as actors together, mm-hmm. like they made the show.
You saw how it paid off. Mm-hmm. Whereas in the book, you're just waiting, waiting, waiting. I do love the ending and I like the slow burn and the building of the tension,
mm-hmm.
but it just wasn't a perfect story. And I felt like we had to wait too long to get to your point, their personalities, like their pivotal moments came very late.
Yeah.
And I would have loved more of them throughout the whole thing.
Agreed.
All right. Anything else you want to add?
No.
All right. Anyone who read this book, please let us know if it has turned you gay, because we're doing conversion research. All right, that's all we have for you today. If you like what you heard, please make sure to follow, subscribe, and rate and review the podcast on whatever platform you're listening on. If you have any book recommendations or questions for us, you can email us at fullybookedcalfpod@gmail.com. Also, be sure to follow us on TikTok and Instagram at fullybookedcalfpod to see our upcoming reads. Thanks for checking us out, and remember,
if you need us, we're fully booked.
Bye! Bye.